Sailors are obsessed with water. I used to think that water was basically wet, but now that I've been sailing a few years, I realize how ignorant I was in the ways of the sea. As any experienced sailor or gardener will tell you, there's no such thing as the right amount of water. There's either too much or too little, but for sailors, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Apparently, water can also be the wrong color, green, blue, brown or gray, or even the wrong shape. Not only short or steep, but even lumpy. Next time you're eating out, just try complaining, "Excuse me, waiter, this water's lumpy, don't you know?" I promise you, it will end in tears, and they won't be any old tears. If it's a Gordon Ramsay establishment, there'll be effing ones. As for complaining your water's raw, you don't even want to go there. But there's one aspect of this water self-torture that aerates boat owners more than any other. They are forever dipping a forefinger into nooks and crevices and touching it to their tongue to taste whether it is A, salty, B, fresh, or C, GRP tangy. This is how they can tell whether their boat is slowly sinking on account of water coming in: A, from above, B, from below, or C, simply dissolving. That basically covers all the options. A couple of months back, I was sailing off Mersey, heading towards Brightling Sea in one of those big East Coast specials, all topsides and no depth, much like the Essex woman of my dreams. Skipper Steve asked me, "How are we for water?" I looked around at the undulating mass of corrugated brown moose and said, "There's lots of it, Steve, but it's all shallow." As an East Coast veteran, I'd have thought he'd have known that. He then asked me to go below to look at the echo sounder, which was a special East Coast model with minus numbers and an altimeter. I reported back that although the alarm was going off, it still hadn't gone into minus double figures, and Steve replied, "That's fine then, just checking. We've got enough water to cut the corner." Like many boat owners, Steve is nervous about the threat of osmosis, so much so that he doesn't allow any water on board and has to make do with tins of beer, wine and bottles of whiskey. Osmosis is an ever-present fear for owners of GRP boats, and even though Steve's is made of wood, he's not taking any chances. Of course, all proper yachts are full of holes anyway, although the proper nautical term for them is seacocks. There are water inlets and outlets for engines, sinks, jacuzzis and herbaceous borders, and even extra ones just for show. In fact, that's not strictly true. These last kind are made of impossibly exotic materials, and their main purpose is to leak constantly in order to provide a steady stream of income for the boatyards who replace them every year. But there are two onboard water features that really drive sailors round the U-bend. One is the toilet, which, unlike a land toilet, is festooned with so many flexible pipes and levers it looks like a 1970s Doctor Who monster, but is far more menacing. Curiously, male sailors in particular are so proud of their toilets they refer to them as the Baby Blake or the Levaque, just as they would the Ferrari or the Lamborghini. If Baby Blakes had key fobs, these blokes would casually twirl them at the yacht club bar. Even so, they'd be hard-pressed to match the facilities on my Sailfish. In fact, I don't want to make owners of lesser sunseekers feel any more inadequate than strictly necessary, but my Sailfish must surely be the only 18.5-footer in the world with two toilets. This gives me considerable advantages, not just in the corporate hospitality market, but also socially. I remember one particular weekend last summer when, before setting off, my friend Angie timidly inquired about my onboard facilities. In fact, this is something I've noticed about women. While men's interest in boat toilets is in their technical and engineering ingenuity, women guests on man boats have a more practical interest. Also, another thing I've noticed is that whenever we boys step up to the shroud to relieve ourselves over the side, emitting a luxuriant sigh of satisfaction, this then prompts any woman on board to ask, "How long before we get there?" I'm not quite sure how the two are related. Anyway, as a newish kind of man, I pride myself on providing women guests with a full complement of amenities, and when Angie made her tentative inquiry, I dived below, emerged brandishing two brand new toilets, one in each hand, and with casual sophistication offered her a choice, 1 litre or two. I felt so suave that if I'd been wearing a tuxedo, I'd have been tempted to say shaken or stirred. And Angie clearly was shaken and stirred. I could also tell by the expression on her face, slightly pained, that she was giving weighty consideration to her options. Now, the more finicky among you might point out that the correct skippery term for toilet is heads. But you'd be wrong. The actual correct nautical term for my sailfish toilets is plastic jugs. And I've got to tell you, they were exceptional value. I got a nest of three for £1, and you just can't argue with that. Although I suppose the half-litre one is a bit more ornamental than strictly practical. Of course, once sailors get ashore, there's a sea change in their attitude to water. Most skippers monitor water usage on board with a psychopathic zeal, controlling rations as if they were stranded in the Gobi Desert. Use more than a teaspoon of water for anything at all and you'll be in big trouble. Ashore, though, and especially in marinas, it's a different matter. They'll be splashing it about all over, hosing down the decks for hours and just leaving hoses running just for the sheer hell of it. In the washrooms, it's the same. With all this so-called free water, they stand under the shower until they're as wrinkly as walnuts. What's more, they even tip you off, not just about the best marina showers on the whole coast, but the best shower booth. Third one along's got the best water pressure. Open the hot tap half full, the cold tap full. Then once back on board, you're back in 1940s austerity Britain, and the skipper's virtually issuing coupon books for weekly teaspoons of water. It's all a bit unhinged. Another thing sailors love immersing themselves in is their stern glands, any discussion of which I don't think is suitable for a family publication. Suffice to say, I've been within an ace of calling social services on more than one occasion when I've heard boat owners talking quite openly about squeezing stern glands till they weep. All boats leak. It's a fundamental truth, and my sailfish is no different. Last year, I invited a posh bloke from one of the posh boat mags to spend a weekend on my boat. Naturally, he'd never owned a boat as such, so the only spillages he'd ever encountered were when the staff, on corporate jollies, had heeled the boat a little too sharply and upset the olive in his vodka martini. Apart from the lack of staff, spending a weekend on my boat was an eye-opener for him in other ways too. When he passed me up a teacup from below, and I casually noted that it was half full of water, he went ashen and blurted out in absolute horror, "Your boat leaks!" I looked at him perplexed and said, "Well, of course it does, it's a boat." That night, he slept ashore, wearing his life jacket for all I know, in a cheap £9.99 tent I keep on board. The heavens opened, and I'm delighted to say he got absolutely drenched. On the other hand, as I know most of the places where my boat leaks, I positioned myself strategically and kept myself toasty dry. The next night it rained again and he decided to sleep on board. I gave him a berth under the worst leaks. Again, I kept perfectly dry. It was cruel but fun. Anyway, this summer's torrential rain has also presented me with a tremendous opportunity. I may not have done much sailing, but I've spent a lot of time on my back in the cabin, listening to the drumming of the rain on the coach roof and waiting for the first droplet to land on my forehead. The findings of my research are very positive in one respect. I'm now pretty certain that most of the water sloshing about in the bottom of my boat comes from above. The bad news is, even though I've replaced the old leaky windows, it's now pretty clear I've replaced them with new leaky ones that leak in exactly the same places. All that effort for nothing. The other bonus to this summer of rain is that it's opened a host of new and exciting cruising areas, particularly for lift keelers like the sailfish. In fact, me and a few other sailfishers have been thinking of holding an impromptu rally. The only trouble is we can't get hold of any Admiralty charts of Gloucester.